Rebecca Kent here with another Tomorrow's Leaders podcast. In this episode, I speak to Joe Allen, the chief executive of fund management company Frogmore. Joe is a property industry stalwart. She's fierce in the office and resolutely resilient, which is a trait reflected somewhat in her favourite emoji. Of course, I asked her her favourite emoji. Here are some clips from the interview.
I think my professional persona, people would think of me perhaps as a little bit firm, a bit scary, and Miss Clipboard. Actually, outside of work, I'm very much a family person. I don't go and watch any film or movie unless it's got some kind of cartoon content in it. If I was a plane, I was flying into headwinds and I just kept flying and it was harder, more effort than if I'd maybe spent a bit of time getting people behind me. Somebody came to me the other day with a CV and he got a 2-1 and in brackets, mitigating circumstances. I said, what does this mean? And he said to me, someone in my family was ill. So I said, but are you apologising that you got a 2-1? He said, well, everybody wants a first. I said, look, total rubbish. It's all about the right attitude. And so that's what I look for in any recruit, is are they going to represent us? Well, I'm not one for the kind of, perhaps sort of laid back, trendy polo neck. Yeah. Our guys come in, they wear suits and ties, shiny shoes. So I'm looking for professional people. What I do now is I pick the events that I think might put me out of my comfort zone. Females in my family live to be on average about 99 years old, not joking, so I shall outsee all of you.
As you can hear, this was a really honest interview with someone who works hard and importantly is interested in nurturing the industry's next generation of talent. And if that last clip there is anything to go by, she's going to be around for some time. This interview also explains why ice cream parlours are the new pubs and we talk about footballers' hairstyles. True. Hello, listeners. I'm Rebecca Kent. Welcome to EG's Tomorrow's Leaders podcast. So this is a series where we have a bit of a chit chat with some of the property industry's exciting young talent, as well as those who have sort of grafted their way to the top and have been there, seen that and done it all in the industry and are still eminently exciting, just like the young people. But most importantly, our guests on this podcast have agreed to draw on their sort of years of experience and their required wisdom to impart some advice for the benefit of all of our listeners. So our guest today definitely falls into the been there, seen it all category. And I'm delighted that Joe Allen, Chief Executive of Frogmore, is sitting across from me in the studio. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Rebecca. You make me sound so old.
Sorry, that was not my intention at all. Just far more experienced.
Thank you. I prefer that. Thank you.
So, you've been around, but is it still exciting?
Definitely. Life's as exciting as you make it, isn't it? I don't feel any different today. I'm age 50. I think that's a well-publicised number. Celebrated my 50th birthday this April. But I've worked in real estate since I left university in 1988. So that's quite a long time. And my existing role for 23 years. So I guess I am old, aren't I?
Well, you look fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm sure that's not come without great times, great experiences and great successes, which we're here to talk about today. So, Joe, we'll just talk a little bit about Frogmore.
I joined Frogmore in 94 from Richard Ellis. They were one of my clients. And when I joined them, they were a publicly traded company, Frogmore Estates PLC. And by 2000, our then managing director led a management buyout, took the company private in 2000. And between 2000 and 2005, we were a private company. And in 2005, we were introduced to the world of private equity. And ever since then, we have been exclusively a manager of private real estate funds, UK only. So whilst I've been there for 23 years, it doesn't seem like the same company over the whole time period.
That keeps things fresh, I suppose, yeah. The way the company keeps evolving.
It does. Our advantage, we're quite entrepreneurial and we're owned by Paul White, our chairman. So we're fairly autonomous, which is great.
So what's a typical week in Joe Allen's shoes?
Oh, crikey. Well, it used to be dealing with the assets you know, I was development director and then asset management director, so hands-on, heavy lifting. Now it's more about interfacing with investors, perhaps raising capital from time to time, dealing with colleagues, sort of flying the flag, being an ambassador for Frogmore. It's actually a really varied role. You just don't know. You set out at the beginning of the week with a focus and a list of tasks, and by 10 o'clock on Monday, a whole load of other stuff has come at you. So you have to be quite reactive as well as, you know, setting your course. So I might be meeting people like you doing a podcast. This is a first. This is a first for me, by the way, podcast. I had to actually look up what that meant, which I'm embarrassed to say. I might be talking to one of our investors over in North America, or meeting advisors or auditors, or usually somebody in the office who needs some guidance on something.
You're a rare breed in the industry in that you're one of the industry's few female chief executives.
I believe so. I don't know how many of us there are, but yes, not many.
Gender diversity is increasingly talked about in the industry. Have you ever looked back at your career and thought, you know, parts of it were challenging because you were a female, or you are a female?
Well, that's something I'm asked a lot. And do you know what? I don't think I've ever noticed. I know that sounds awful, but I don't think I've ever really noticed. And I think it's a numbers game. Now, when I was at I went to Bristol Poly, and I think there were 80 students on real estate courses. That's the valuation and estate management course that I did and the quantity surveying course, of which I think there were only about 5 female students. And amongst those, I can only think of 3 of us who remained in the industry. That's Ilaria Del Beato, who latterly was at GE, and Rachel Andrew, who's a director in Jones Lang's office in Birmingham. So if you're only starting with 5 in the talent pool, if you like, at the start, it makes logical sense that you're not going to end up with more than 5 in our age group from that particular university. But I think now you find there are a lot more females attracted to a career in property. And I don't necessarily fly the flag for gender, but latterly I've found that I'm trying to do what I can to promote diversity of any sort in the industry. And most recently I found or came across the Pathways to Property programme that Reading University and others support. And I had the privilege this year of going to their annual sort of, you know, panel of deciding which team won the summer school. There was a week of a summer school, and we had to judge which of the teams came up with the best solution. And that was really inspiring because they take young people from schools all over Britain who may not have heard about a career in real estate. And there were all kinds. And that's great because we, at the end of the day, are providing the built environment. We're shaping the built environment. And I think it should be appropriate for the people who live in it. And sometimes I look around and think, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of white middle class people who don't always understand what everyday people want. So I try and do my bit for that.
So do you think that lack of diversity has been reflected in the current or the past built environment?
Well, let's look at going forward. Unless we, as an industry, understand the demands of modern day Britain, we're not going to provide the shopping centres or the working environments that people want. And that's why we're now seeing that, you know, an advent of perhaps WeWork or different types of office space, particularly, is something that you at the EG write about. Whereas we would have traditionally been providing, you know, the raised floor, suspended ceiling, VAV, air conditioning, you know, stuck in a rut. So in order to move forward, you've got to be open to everything. So no, I'm not critical. I'm very proud of the work that I think everyone's well intentioned, but you've got to be alive to new ideas, haven't you?
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about your route into property. Do you think it's been a fairly conventional path to reach where, you know, you have now, or has it taken some exciting or interesting or regretful twists and turns?
Ah, right. Okay. Well, it was conventional in the sense that I ended up on a valuation and estate management course at Bristol, which in those days, as I said, late 80s, there was a milk round, as they called it, with all the big firms to pick the graduates. And I chose to go to Richard Ellis and be on their graduate training scheme. And then I moved client site. So that is a very traditional route, I would think, by today's standards. But I didn't have any experience of a career in property. I come from a farming family in Shropshire. None of my family had ever been to university. I worked quite hard at school. I liked school. So I did okay at exams. And my grandfather, who I adored, said to me, you know, what are you going to do when you grow up? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, that isn't a very good idea. So I said to him, well, what did you do? And he said, I was a quantity surveyor. I said, well, that sounds a bit dull. That's counting sand and bricks. And he said, well, it's a bit more to it than that. So I hot-footed down the library, looked up quantity surveying, and found out that Reading University did a course in surveying. So I went back and told him I was going to do that because I didn't want to let him down. And he thought that was a very good idea. And the rest is history. Could I envisage myself being where I am? No. So I suppose my story is one of grabbing an opportunity and, if you like, jumping on the bus and see where it takes me and making the best of everything that I've or tried to make the best of everything I've done. And you asked me, you know, to think about what I might say to people who are starting out now. And my answer would simply be, you know, that whatever you're doing, put some can-do attitude and hard work into it, and the sky's the limit. It really is. You know, don't allow any setback to sort of knock you off course. You know, be resilient and positive and nice with people, and that will get you a very long way. So I clearly have a few skills, but I would say that I've come a long way from, you know, given the base from which I came.
So can you think of an example of when you had to really call upon those traits?
Yeah, I suppose working in development, there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of people with different objectives. If you're dealing with contractors, of course, there's a lot of contractual and money at stake. Dealing with tenants, you know, you really want to land that pre-let, but not at any cost, and they've got their own drivers. So you have to sort of know when to push ahead and be firm, and know when to help people get out of a corner that they've backed themselves into. So yes, I would say some of the development projects that we did were particularly challenging at times, and maybe, you know, post-GFC when, you know, banks are leaning on you, or you're worried that things aren't going so well. That's when you've just got to dig deep and be resilient. I think resilience is the main driver.
Mm. There's absolutely no sort of logical segue here into my next
question. Okay, far away.
But it's always nice for our listeners to get to know the people behind the microphone a little bit more. So I've asked you to have a think about some interesting things about yourself that your people may not know, either in your professional or your personal life.
Yeah.
Hit me with them.
Okay. Well, from my, I think my professional persona, people would think of me perhaps as a little bit firm, a bit scary, and Miss Clipboard, you know, ticking my boxes, and, you know, this is not happening, this is not process, I'm very organised. Actually, outside of work, and I try to bring it into the office, I'm very much a family person. You know, I don't have children of my own, but I've got a whole raft of nieces and nephews who spend a lot of time with me because the things I do are fun. So I don't see any films. I'm sort of slightly embarrassed to say this. I don't go and watch any film or movie unless it's got some kind of cartoon content in it. I love to, weekends, just put on my JCB overalls and dig the garden. I make my own jam. I haven't yet progressed to knitting my own knickers, but that's probably not too far down the line, to be honest. So I'm a little bit of a sort of home farmer. You know, I go up to Norfolk. My husband Justin and I have a home in Norfolk, and I get my Land Rover Defender out of the garage, and I poodle around, you know, looking like something that's been dragged through a haystack. And then on Sunday, I sort of put back my professional face, and I get back down here and, you know, get the grubbiness from under my nails.
Is that important then, to have the two personas? Do you think, is there a little bit of the sort of Farmer Joe that comes through in the wig?
Yes, because how I try to run the office, you know, obviously I'm chief executive, I've filtered my way up through the company. So a lot of the people who work there, we've worked together a long time. I was their teammate and their friend, and I'm not anymore. I'm now, you know, the person they have to go to if they want something. But I try to bring that family, as does Paul. You know, Paul White and I have worked together for 23 years, and we have a very special bond through time and just trust in each other and having the same objective. And how we approach Frogmore is very much a family feel. So I'll be talking to them about making jam in the same way that the boys are, you know, talking about whatever they've been doing at the weekend with their children. So we are very hardworking, and we have to respond to our international investors in a professional way, and we're very good at what we do in terms of property. But we have a lot of fun in the office, and I make sure that we do, because we spend so much time together that, you know, life's too short, isn't it? And when things are going wrong, as invariably they will, or we've got some trouble, I will say to them, listen, this is not life and death. We will laugh our way through this. And so I try to bring my sort of home life into the office as much as I can.
So if you're talking to Paul about making jam, what's he talking to you about?
Oh, that'll be shooting, golfing, you know, who he went to dinner with yesterday. All his friends are in real estate as well. I don't think I've yet shared my jam recipe with him, but I have with his wife. Anna and I swap recipes, yeah.
Excellent. So are you a WhatsApp, Facebook, Twitter user? All of those things?
Crikey, Rebecca. I am a Luddite. I'm afraid, I am embarrassed to tell you that technology to me is a necessary evil. I have never been on Facebook. I've never seen Facebook. I'm aware of what it is. Don't look at me like that. I'm a WhatsApp person. WhatsApp and Instagram, my little people, my little nieces and nephews send me lots of pictures on Instagram, and I'm on WhatsApp, and I obviously have all my email. But no, I don't tweet. Although I did learn the other day that tweeting is very handy if you want to complain about something. Carrie, my secretary, managed to get hold of some parcel delivery company that I failed to attract their attention within seconds by sending a tweet about it. So I can see the benefits.
Incredible.
But I need some lessons. That's why we try and get young people in. That's what I need. Refreshing.
So it's perhaps not sensible to ask you what your favourite emoji might be?
Oh, yes. No, I like emojis. And I thought about that because you asked me. So I had a choice in choosing. You see, I like the sunshine and scuba diving. So I was going to go for the desert island or the whale, but I decided to go for the thumbs up because I'm a positive person. You know, I try and bring, if you're to be a leader, you have to be resilient. You have to be able to move yourself from a negative way of thinking about a problem into how are we going to tackle this. So I like to give a thumbs up. I like to say, yes, come on, that's going well. So the thumbs up would be my favourite emoji.
You were talking about some of the young people, surrounding yourself with young people.
Yeah.
What's the kind of company culture at Frogmore, and what's the sort of age breakdown?
I think the youngest person in our office is probably early 20s, and the oldest person is 80. And the range.
How many people?
There's about 40 of us. Mm-hmm. And we like that because the young people come in generally for some kind of training. So on the surveying side, we'll take on analysts who we will then teach about property investment or asset management, whatever they want to do. So the last one that we took on, he came from Cass Business School. He did some analysis for the acquisition team. Then he told me he wanted to be a chartered surveyor. So we trained, put him through, you know, helped, assisted him with his RSS training. And he's now an asset manager and a really, you know, valued part of the team. And behind him, then Natasha joined us recently to follow whatever path she wants. And then at the other end of the scale, you know, Dave, who's in our post room, and Vi, who's one of our tea ladies, they just keep going, and they can keep going and making tea and being very much part of the family as long as they want to. We never use the R word, retirement. It just doesn't happen at Frogmore. It's like Hotel California. You can check out, but you never leave, really.
So how do you nurture the young talent?
What's happened now is that young people in the workplace are far more qualified than we were when we came out of college. You know, they have to work so hard at school, achieve, you know, A stars, and if you don't get a first, you know, somebody came to me the other day with a CV and he got a 2-1 and in brackets, mitigating circumstances. I said, what does this mean? And he said to me, someone in my family was ill. So, you know, I said, but are you apologizing that you got a 2-1? He said, well, everybody wants a first. I said, look, total rubbish. It's all about the right attitude. But the point is, young people come from college or whatever their route is, and they are very highly trained and they have great expectations and great enthusiasm. And when you come into an organization, you're actually bottom of the tree. And that's the hardest thing, I think, for I don't like calling them young people. What should I call them, Rebecca? Tell me, what is
the next gen?
The next gen. Right. Okay. Let's call next gen. Next gen. Come into the office. And basically, from a practical perspective, it's sort of sticking dots on maps and doing research. And it's such a sort of come down from them from being top of the tree at uni. So you don't want to dampen anyone's enthusiasm, and you don't want to tell them that you're not really worth much effort to me. I know you're an intelligent person. I like that you've clearly got an academic background, but now I need to teach you about property. So it's really about being a big brother or sister. And so what I try and do is say, right, well, this is the plan. Get your head down for 6 months, really crunch these cash flows in Excel so you understand them inside out. The inputs, I know you can work the machine, but you need to understand the inputs, because it's rubbish in, rubbish out, basically. And even if you just bring it me and it's all in colour, I'm not interested in the colour bit, I'm interested in the answer and how you got there. So I tell them to learn their trade, keep their head down, and then we will develop them to the next level. And that seems to work.
Are you recruiting actively now, or do you go through phases, or do you take someone that sort of knocks on your door and looks really strong?
All things. You know, one of my favourite stories, and I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning him because I'm a big fan of his, is Stephen Pollock, who's got his own firm now, Buchanan Bond. He came to us, he lived up in Liverpool, he'd studied a property degree, he came to London and he just went and knocked on doors, and he sat in our reception until Paul White had chance to give him just 5 minutes of property advice. And Paul said to me, I've got a young boy in reception, I think he's got something about him, let's see what you can do. So I had a chat with Stevie, and it shone through the kind of the can-do entrepreneurial attitude. I said, okay, do you want to come and work with me for 6 months? We'll see how we get on. And he said, yeah, okay. And I'm embarrassed to say, I said to him, there's just one thing you need to do. And he said, what's that? I said, change your haircut.
Because at the time it looked like what?
Yeah, I don't know. I just, like, as a Premiership footballer, I don't know. I just said, I don't object to your haircut, but honestly, you're making life hard for yourself.
But he had the right attitude.
He had the right attitude, and he's gone on to do great things, and I'm so proud of him. So, yes, we have people who just walk in, the random selection. We don't recruit very much because people very rarely leave us. So, you know, we're a team of 40. We don't want to grow the platform to be a great big Blackstone. You know, we're good at what we do. You know, there's only so much UK real estate we think we can invest in sensibly. We do a heavy lifting asset management, so it's very value add. And a team of 40, that we like that. That works well.
What do you want from the employees of your company?
Our brand, the Frogmore brand, is very strong on, it's property properly was the strap line that we chose. It's a 50 plus year business. The founder is still alive. We are very traditional British. Our word is our bond. Honesty, transparency and professionalism goes through our brand. And so that's what I look for in any recruit, is are they going to represent us? Well, I'm not one for the kind of, you know, perhaps sort of laid back, trendy polo neck, yeah. You know, our guys come in, they wear suits and ties, shiny shoes. So I'm looking for professional people. Obviously, skill base, let's take it as read, they've got the right attributes and skill base. but it's about the fit of the person within our organisation, because we are a strong team because we work as a team. So it's not a team of superstars who can't play together. You know, we are, our strength is in our unity.
Let's go back onto you and your career. Tell me one or two moments that you're most proud of.
Well, from a personal perspective, I ran the London Marathon this year for my 50th birthday. I am a non-runner. I had no idea how I was going to do it. The objective was to finish without injuring myself. I ran the whole way at a constant pace, and I'm very proud of myself for that.
Well done. What was your time, Jo?
My time was 5 hours and 36 minutes.
Fantastic.
Yes. So that was good. And I raised, with the help of people in the industry, so thank you to them if they're listening, I raised money for the Willow Foundation. And I was very proud of that. So that was a highlight sort of personally. Aside from meeting my husband, by the way, Justin Brand, TFL, keeps London moving, growing and making life in our city better, he tells me every
day.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Justin. Yeah. When the central line's down, you know who to call. From a highlight, I mean, Rebecca, I suppose it has to be that I've kept going with the same team for 23 years. You know, what we've built, what Paul White, Patrick Smith, myself, and many others, you know, along the line have built, we're so proud of Frogmore. You know, in the scheme of things, it's not a great big, you know, institutional organisation, but we've done some good work and made some good money for, you know, pensioners around the world, and I'm proud of that. You know, deals that I'm proud of most recently, probably South Place Hotel. You know, it was an office scheme that we conceived in the GFC came along, sort of hit that off track. So we went back into the office, sat with a damp edition of Estates Gazette on my head and thought, what are we going to do? And you know, came up with an idea of a hotel, pre-let it to D&D. It's been trading. I don't know if you've been there, but South Park, you know, it's a little bit different because we let Conran and Partners and D&D do what they liked inside, because I decided they knew about running hotels, not me. Negotiated a lease with them, built the hotel. McLaren did a great job, and then we sold it last year. And so, from start cradle to grave, you know, it was a plan B, get out of trouble, which turned out to be a very successful strategy. And I'm proud of that, and all the people who worked with me to help that happen.
You also got a very significant Stratford.
Yes, that's our new one, Stratford Shopping Centre. We bought that the beginning of this year. So that's about, you know, just keeping the shopping. I mean, it's a very successful shopping centre already, very popular with the local catchment area, hardly any vacant units, but we'll keep that going and interesting and vibrant. And that's the case in point. You know, I don't know anything about skateboarding, but I do, you know, I'm learning quickly. So there's things that the people have knew and want that might not be something that we would have perhaps anticipated in advance of buying it. So we've got to keep that fresh. And then around the centre, working with the local authority, it's full of opportunities for to continue the regeneration story. So it's really exciting.
Collaboration is something the industry talks a lot about. Where do you think it's been done well? And who do you think should collaborate more?
Okay, well, where it's been done, but I think I would say this, but Frogmore has a track record of working with so many partners. And what we tend to do, we either work pari passu with somebody on the equity side, or we work with people who have a skill base that we don't have. So probably the best known collaboration we have is with Stephen Conway at Galliard Homes, because they're, you know, volume house builder amongst many other things. So we've done many projects with them, but we've worked with, you know, student housing providers, data center operators, where there's a specialist skill base. So we have, you know, all available on our website. We have a long track record of that. But in terms of working, you're talking about a bigger picture. It's got to be public and private sector. It's very difficult, and I see this because now Justin he used to be at Aviva, and now he's at TFL. You know, there's such a sort of political and different drivers that seem to come from the public sector that not always commercial. So out in the private sector, it's about ultimately making money, return on capital, and that doesn't really feed through, I think, into the public sector, who have other things that they want to achieve. I guess the main challenge, if I was looking for somebody to wave a magic wand, would be on the side of housing. You know, the local authorities own a lot of land, and why can't they release some of that for some of the big house builders to help them provide the homes that we need? Mm. I'm sure loads of very clever people are working on it, and it's all in hand and it'll happen next week. Mm. But we haven't seen much of it, really, have we?
No, exactly. So what do you think that sort of sector looks like going forward? How much optimism do you have?
I'm very optimistic. I've got my thumbs up emoji out here. Of course they're going to be working. You know, the government have made it a policy objective. You know, the London Mayor's made it a policy objective, haven't they, to build more homes and more affordable homes. So, you know, I'm optimistic that people will make it happen because we need to. You know, but because of the necessity, that will make it happen.
What social and cultural trends do you think our industry should tune into a lot?
Gosh, now that's such a big question, isn't it? Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, culturally, that there's a big shift. I mean, take Stratford Shopping Centre you were talking about earlier. We find there's a lot of demand for ice cream parlours and coffee shops, and I'm like, I can't understand it. I mean, who's eating all this ice cream? And then people say, well, of course, there's a whole section of society that don't drink alcohol, so where do you think they go in the evenings? People want to meet each other. They go and have an ice cream sundae. Very nice. Can you invite me? Because that would be great. So, you know, that's one of the things I'm talking about, you know, being mindful of all these changes.
Let's talk about networking.
Yes.
Do you do it much?
Well, I have to, and I have always. But you see, through passage of time, as you very eloquently elaborated, I've been around the block a few times. So I do tend to know a lot of people. And it's amazing how many people came out of Bristol around about my time. So Guy Granger at Jones Lang LaSalle, Colin Wilson, Cushman & Wakefield, Ilario, who I've mentioned, Mike Hussey from Almacantar. You know, we had quite a good peer group. And just over the years, you're on a graduate training scheme, you get to meet people. So that's good. But really what I would say to what do we call them? Next gen, you do. It's about who you know. And it's increasingly difficult actually to network because of compliance issues. You know, people can't necessarily accept social invitations now. So I suppose, you know, LinkedIn and social networking is their way of doing what I would probably have done, you know, down the Dover Street wine bar on a Friday evening. I don't think it exists anymore. But yeah, you know, that it's so important who you know, because people will generally help you. People are not out to, you know, get one over you. It's a very collaborative industry and supportive. Mm. So if you're open to people, you help them, even in a small way, they remember that. And years later, you might think, actually, I just do need to get into an organisation. I wonder if they can help me, and they will. So it's very important.
No doubt you're in a position now where, you know, you might go to a networking event and people are approaching you rather than you having to sort of tackle.
I know, I'm very popular for a reason I don't really understand. So I try to be selective. But what I do now is I go to, I pick the events that I think might put me out of my comfort zone. Because there's no point me going to something that I do want to challenge myself. And so therefore I appreciate how scary it might be if you're just at a university and you have to walk into a room full of, you know, suits and noise and just launch in and get going. Mm. So I try and do that. I will go to something that isn't necessarily in my field and see how I can get on.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And how do you approach it? What's your sort of opening gambit if there's someone there you want to talk to?
I might go up to somebody and say, oh, hello, you know, I don't normally come to these events. How did you find yourself here? Mm. And then you start like that. And people are generally helpful. Mm. I think I've always found being honest. Now, maybe that's a female trait, I'm not sure. But even now, you know, if I'm in a meeting and people are talking about something I don't understand, I'll say, I'm really sorry, but I don't understand what you're talking about. Mm. And people like that because they're happy to tell you. Although most of the time you find they don't know what they're talking about either, which is quite reassuring. So you've got to have a bit of confidence. what I would say to people is, don't feel that you don't know anything and everybody knows everything, because we are actually, when it comes to it, all in the same boat. Don't be frightened to say, if you don't, would you mind explaining that? So that's what I do. I go up to people and just say, oh, hello, you know, I'm Joe, and what's your name? Where'd you come from?
If you are interviewing a potential candidate for a job,
yes,
and you get to that point in the interview where you say, do you have any questions for me? What would it be sensible for them to ask?
I like them to ask where, you know, about me. Where do you see the future of the business going? Because that makes me think, well, they are a big picture player. And they're thinking about, is this a stable platform? And, you know, what's in, you know, what's the future? I like that. I like them to ask us, particularly because we're strong on this, about culture, because for me it's cultural fit. But what they generally ask is about money, which is fine as well. You know, if we've all got bills to pay, and I like people to be ambitious. But I like them to demonstrate a question that shows that for them, it's more than just about money. It's about their future, because I think, again, we talked about a trend earlier in this sense of entitlement. I've read some stats, you know, next gen, as we're calling them, they will stay in a job for about 2 years because they don't want to get stale and then move on again to get more experience, etc., etc. Really, for an employer, you want to think that somebody sees this as the right fit for them for over a medium to long term time horizon, if they can see they're going to get progression. And so somebody who asks a question that makes me think they see this as a defining moment, this is the next stage of their life, not just a job for a couple of years and where am I going to sit, that's the kind of question I like.
Excellent, really valuable stuff. If you could hit rewind on any part of your life, what would you change?
It would be my management style in the early days. You know, I'm a very focused person. I get things done. But I realised, looking back, there was a lot of collateral damage. I would pick the people that I needed to achieve the objective. We get on with it and everyone else can clear off out the way. We're doing it anyway. If I was a plane, I was flying into headwinds and I just kept flying and it was harder, more effort than if I'd maybe spent a bit of time getting people behind me. So I worked very hard before I took on the job of chief executive with a lady called Fran Mosco. It used a lot of Dale Carnegie management techniques. I did a lot of self-analysis and self-evaluation. And don't be frightened to do that. Don't be frightened to look at yourself and ask people, particularly people you don't get on with, why is that? And try and address those points, because bringing out the best in people and having support around you will make you, achieve what you need much faster than fighting. So I wish that I'd known that when I was younger, but maybe it takes time and a few sort of knocks and bruises for you to realise that you might be able to do something a bit better.
One last question. I know retirement is not a thing seemingly at Frogmore, but what is the end goal for you professionally?
Right. Well, I'm not going anywhere. As I said, I'm only 50. I've got,
my
family, the females in my family live to be on average about 99 years old, not joking. So I shall outsee all of you listening to this. But what would make me really happy is Dennis Cope and Ken Oliver, the late Ken Oliver, founded the business. Paul White joined us in 95 and has been and is now the owner of the business, a fantastic leader. I've now taken over. I'm in the transition phase from the Paul White era to whatever comes next. I would really love to eventually, when it's time for me to hand over to a successor, look and think, we've left this business in a better shape than we found it, and with great, or not even that, in great shape, but with a real future, because there's some fantastic people who work there and it's got a good legacy, and you want to leave a legacy.
Jo Allen, thank you very much.
Thank
it's
you.
Been fantastic.
I've enjoyed it.